everyone, welcome to the second episode of TFS Spotlight. We discuss anything and everything film related. Basically, the format's going to be the same as in the first one. We like to discuss topics that people like to discuss or debate in the film community, try to shed light on new information about those topics. So let me first introduce everyone joining me tonight, my usual co-host, Tash Aguirre.
Hello, how are you?
And we're also joined today by two very special guests, the creators of thefilmstage.com and our bosses, Dan Mecca and Jordan Rapp.
What's up?
Hello, everyone.
Before we begin, I just want to make two quick corrections to our debut episode. First being that we misspoke when we were talking about Steven Spielberg's film The Good German. We accidentally said The Good Shepherd, which was actually directed by Robert De Niro.
Yeah, I apologize for that, too.
So first, I would like to correct that. We meant to say The Good German. And the other thing is Crash was, in fact, not the last film to be released in a 4x3 DVD, because as Jordan pointed out to me, The Departed was released in a 4x3 DVD. So actually, Crash was just the last Academy Award winner to be released on VHS.
And that's why Jordan runs shit.
So today's topic...
Yeah, wait, this is epic. We just earned our explicit rating on the podcast.
Oh, yes. I was wondering...
Oh, you're going to earn it tonight with me.
So today's topic is an interesting one, because we're going to discuss 3D. And the real reason why Jordan and Dan are here will be revealed in a little bit. Before we get to why they're really here, let's talk a little bit about the history of 3D. Now, everyone knows the classic history of it was pretty much started in the 50s, and there was a little technology buildup before that in the 30s and 40s, where it could go, what they could do. And then the 50s saw, like, a surge of cheesy 3D movies. Like, they were just throwing it out there. And Hash, what do you think about that?
About the use of 3D?
Yeah.
Or, my views of 3D are pretty much the same way I feel about video, which is I understand its use, and if it's able to be used to push a narrative of a film, I'm totally for it, and it could be totally innovative. It can be used in a way to immerse people in the world that the film takes place in. And an example of this that comes, the last movie that was able to do this in 3D, to me at least, was Coraline, where you have these wide shots, these establishing shots, where everything really seems to come alive because of the depth in it. Then again, there are also movies like Beowulf, which just kind of shove 3D in there just for the sake of it. And it's more, to me, it's more of a distraction and a novelty than actually helping the film.
Dan, what's your opinion on 3D?
Yeah, I'm kind of like Hash. I understand its use, but for the most part, I feel that it's, I don't know, more of a kind of an appetizer, more of a side meal in terms of, you know, like watching a movie. You know, for the most part, you'll for what we've had now, pretty much, it's been like that. You know, I mean, you have your movies like My Bloody Valentine, movies like that. You know, like Hash was saying, where it's a gimmick and. And
the
then the final destination. All right, that's it. The final destination. Even to an extent, a movie like Bolt or Up.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I saw Up in the theater with 3D, and it didn't take away from the experience, but at the same time, I didn't really get much out of it with the 3D. So I mean, there are movies that are obviously pushing the limits, and showing what can be done, and we'll talk about that later, but. Right now, to an extent, that's how I feel about it.
Jordan, what about you?
Yeah, I think there's like kind of two different sections that the 3D falls under. And like Dan said, like there's those films like My Bloody Valentine where they just throw shit at the screen and, you know, and literally just, it's just for excitement and stuff. And then with Up and Coraline to an extent, Coraline kind of had a mix of those two. But I feel like with Up and especially now with Avatar, which we'll talk about later, I listened to this interview with the people that created Up, and instead of, you know, having 3D be a tool to throw stuff at you, with Up at least they used it as more of a viewing window to look inside and just add another depth layer to the to the film. And you know, with Up was the first film that I saw in 3D that I wasn't actually completely bothered. Like I probably 20 minutes into the film I didn't even notice I had my glasses on, and I saw it twice in 3D, and both times I you know, there was no problems.
In reference to Up, I saw Up in 2D, and when I was watching it, I could definitely tell where they were particular making shots around the mm-hmm. 3D aspect.
Yeah, I noticed that too.
But you know, I felt it's like, okay, I'm seeing it in 2D. The fact that they're shooting this partly in for 3D isn't bothering me. There are films where it's like they have that gimmick, like Monsters vs. Aliens comes to mind. You have this opening shot of the dude playing with a ping pong or whatever it is. And it's just coming back and forth on the screen. It's like, I'm not intrigued. I'm not enthralled by that. I'm not intrigued by that. And then when you have other directors who, and now let's get to the, 3D saw a real resurgence in 03. It started in 03 with, many consider it to be James Cameron's documentary, IMAX documentary, Ghosts of the Abyss, which the movie itself, you know, is an IMAX documentary. It's a good movie, but, you know, everyone considers it's like, oh, it's this huge resurgence of 3D, and I don't know. I mean, was it for the better, though, I think is the question. What do you guys think? Was it, in fact, for the better that 3D saw a real resurgence in 03 and continued on to movies like My Bloody Valentine, Monsters vs. Aliens, really in the animated market?
I mean, sure, there's no reason why it was bad. It takes a long time for anything to reach its, you know, fullest potential. So, I mean, I'm glad it came back because 3D has always had the potential of creating another layer of film if it's done right. And it has to be brought back at some point, so I'm totally fine with it. So long as it's being used properly, I'm fine with this use of 3D.
Yeah, totally. I think it, like, when you saw, you know, the introduction of sound into film, like with the jazz singer and stuff, mm-hmm. and like,
sound. Sorry.
And like these huge sound. I mean, these massive sound devices had to be you know, placed on set, and this prevented. A lot of people say that the introduction
there was
of sound,
10 years, awkward 10 years,
where it actually like mm-hmm. hindered the production of film and
yeah, film like actors art. Leaning into plants and stuff like that because the microphone was there.
Yeah, so I think 3D has like this the beginnings of 3D had like those like
and still does have and still does
yeah. I mean, but I think which Avatar, which we'll get to, it just kind of has to break through. You know, it has to give time, have some movies. You know, like My Bloody Valentine and things like mm-hmm. that. And even Monsters vs. Aliens, which kind of had a mix, and Coraline had a mix. And I think that, you know, it just takes time, and now we're seeing 5 years later, 6 years later that. There's going to be quite a turn, I think.
The reason I asked if it was for the better is because now we're seeing a lot of movies being re-released in 3D. You had Toy Story and Toy Story 2, which was re-released, which I hear was okay. But I think that's because Pixar was always able to go back into the raw files and mess with the camera. And the
it really was only just adding a second camera.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That's all.
But so. Yeah, you heard things like there was a rumor James Cameron was going to re-release Titanic in 3D. And it's like, you gotta stop someone at a point and say like, okay, you didn't shoot this way, it's not gonna work. It's kind of like back to our cropping argument hash, where it's just if it's not the original intention, it doesn't work properly.
That it goes the same way with anything, with what Lucas did with his original trilogy. It's just we remember the originals. Keep it how it is. And plus, I really don't want to see Kate Winslet's scene in 3D. I'm totally fine without having that. I just keep it how it was. Keep the original source.
Now, the reason we're talking about this tonight, and Jordan and Dan, I know the two of you have been itching to discuss this. You two of you have seen Avatar, right?
Yes, we have.
Yes, we have.
So, bastards.
Okay, so first of all, I want to tell the audience right now, we're not getting into plot details tonight at all.
Technical, man.
We're talking solely technical. So, Jordan and Dan, is Avatar what it was promised to be?
Totally. It is everything, I guess, everything that James Cameron promised. That there was a lot of skeptics after Avatar Day, which is, I guess, pretty much a failure, and it kind of got a lot of critics jumping Titanic style on Avatar, and kind of the overblown budget, and if the 3D would work, and if the, you know, kind of the immersive, effectual world would collaborate with the human world, like, correctly, and it did, it really did. It incredible. It immerses you in its world completely. It pulls no punches. It tries everything you would imagine it could try, and pulls 97% of it off. And it's just really an achievement, really an achievement that people would be talking about for, you know, generations and generations.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And I think it was interesting. In an interview Cameron had, he said, you know, he made this film for 2D specifically. Like he had 2D in mind the whole time. He said like 2/3 of audiences will see it in that. And I know, I think, what is there? I think there's, it's opening to 17,000 screens worldwide. And I think 5,000 of those are 3D. And I mean, anyone listening, I really urge you guys to check it out in 3D. Now, to clarify, we saw this film in real D, not IMAX. We saw it in real D, just a digital projection, you know, on a regular theater screen. So I'm checking it out. I think Dan is too.
Yeah.
An IMAX opening weekend to see what the difference is.
Can't wait.
I actually bring it back to what we said before. When I saw Monsters vs. Aliens, I thought it was almost, IMAX was too much. I mean, I sat in the middle. I heard that if you sat like up top, it's,
yeah, you gotta sit up top for that. Otherwise, the screen just completely, the angle mm-hmm. you're at just completely screws you up.
Yeah, and it was actually really distracting with Monsters vs. Aliens, but no, the 3D is done. You know, you can tell every single detail in this movie down to like the little leaves of grass to like the lights, you know, any light in the background to the waterfall way off in the distance. Yeah. Like you know, there's a real sense of depth. And actually some of my favorite scenes in the film were that show, you know, a huge sense of depth. If you saw the clip online with the chase scene with the
Thanator.
Yeah. And you know, when he goes to jump off the waterfall,
seems just like incredible, that, yeah. 3D, yeah.
It's just awesome, and
but it's more, you know. But the thing, and the other thing about Avatar that people have to kind of realize is it's a lot more than just the 3D, you know. Because I mean, yes, it's the best 3D film in terms of the use of it out, you know, ever, I guess. But it's the meticulous detail in the actual special effects, in the actual animation of this world. I mean, you know, Cameron uses a lot of liquids on the faces of these creatures, these aliens, to contrast, you know, in order to define their kind of their skin, their flesh, their faces. And it works because with that contrast, it form works a little bit better. I think that was a huge mistake that actually, and it still is a huge mistake that Zemeckis faces with his movies, yeah. Because he doesn't, I'm sure he understands it, but he's not willing, I guess, to kind of maybe heed to some narrative bending in order to make the technology make more sense. You know what I mean? Like an Avatar, yeah. People sometimes in Avatar, like for example, people are sweating where maybe they shouldn't be, but it works because, you know, everything is more defined. But in a movie like, The Polar Express, it's very, you know, very clean, and that's a problem because they look porcelain.
Yeah, it's like a wooden.
Yes. Yeah, like a doll.
It's interesting you bring up Zemeckis, because Zemeckis used the same motion capture technology Cameron used, right?
Yeah, and I was gonna ask Jordan about this. Like, I wonder how Image Movers Digital like feels, you know, because I mean, Christmas Carol is doing fine in the box office, and it got fine, I guess, okay reviews.
Yeah.
But I mean, really, people, it came and went. I mean, you know, people are seeing it. But really, the whole 3D part of it is just really ignored, kind of, even in the reviews.
Yeah, even I remember someone at Comic-Con said that Avatar makes Christmas Carol look like Steamboat Willie. And I mean, it is true. I mean, with Christmas Carol, like there's some. I mean, have you guys seen Christmas Carol?
No, I haven't.
No.
Okay, I saw it. The biggest problem I have with it is just the narrative that, I mean, obviously it's a tried and true.
I'm talking about Avatar, but okay.
Yeah, yeah. Well, no, it's just, there's a lot of scenes that, you know, I think the idea that, I mean, obviously it's a great, you know, family film if you want to check it out, but there's a lot of times in the narrative where it's just kind of, you know, what's going to happen, and Zemeckis doesn't do much to, like, to explore anything differently, which is fine because it's a story, you know, that everyone knows and loves. But like, there's an opening scene that's amazing where he flies through this, you know, the city, and you go up and over buildings, and it lasts a solid like 3 or 4 minutes, and like, it's just breathtaking, especially with the 3D. And I mean, that's the kind of like maybe gimmick that we were talking about earlier, but it works. And the biggest problem I have with the Zemeckis movies are when you get, you know, into the story and the characters, they just don't feel real. And that's the huge difference with Avatar. Like, you feel like these novices.
Yeah, like you can believe
that these characters are there, and these characters, like, you're not filming a computer. A computer is not just creating images. Like, you're filming real people or real things. Yeah,
I mean, well, actually, I mean, and I think both of us felt like this at the beginning of the film of Avatar, without really saying much, the skepticism for me was high, you know, because like I'd built it up a lot, you had built it up a lot, Jordan. And in the beginning I was like, okay, you know, I've seen some of this footage. Yeah. It doesn't look great. I mean, it looks great, but like, does it look great? You know, I was kind of struggling mm-hmm. with myself. But when I knew it was great was when at the end I had an emotional connection to these unreal people.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? These, you know, like to this. Yeah. And
that's what's important.
And the reason I know that it was great is because it snuck up on me. You know, it wasn't thrown in my face. Mm-hmm. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't used through the conduit of a classic Dickens tale or something like that. And yeah, I mean, that's what it comes down to, really. And
do you think that connection was because of the 3D, or was it just because of the
it was because of the 3D, and it was because of the whole world created by these effects that Cameron's been working on for, you know, 15 years or whatever. And
just the money show.
Just
look at, you don't even have to see it in the theaters, just look at it on the TV screen. You can tell the detail was put into it.
Well, and the other thing too is, look, the story is rudimentary, whatever. I mean, without saying you've seen it. This movie was made in the 30s, it was made in the 40s, the 50s, the 60s. You know, every decade has at least five movies, most of them made by Edward Zwick. And the thing is, but the thing that people, I find funny with the reviews coming in is most of them are glowing, but what people, most people say that the story is rudimentary, but what they don't say is the details within the story are incredible, though. Yeah, like, cool. I mean, you know, the story itself, yes, is standard. But I mean, this guy Cameron like created a world, literally. I mean, there are creatures, there are you know, descriptions, there's a fucking language, for God's sake. Like, I mean, so the story's, you know, okay, yeah, simple, but I mean, what's in the story, not just even the animation, is really incredible.
Yeah, I know. Someone said this one when, I know Mary, you're gonna like this, when Transformers 2 came out, yeah, that if you showed like a 1920s audience Transformers 2, they would think robots existed in the future. Like,
yeah.
I mean, you can believe this is a world, you know, you can believe this is another planet out there that exists.
So it's basically like seeing Star Wars for the first time. Back in the 70s.
Which, I didn't have experience.
Well, that's what Roger Ebert said.
Is it really what he said?
Yeah, that's what Roger Ebert said. Yeah. He said his first line was, what did he say? He's like, it reminded me of when I was reminded of when I saw Star Wars for the first time.
Yeah.
Because he said he was skeptical at first. Like,
yeah, that, Avatar. That was the big thing about Roger Ebert. I was waiting for his review because when he saw Avatar skeptical. Day, yeah, he said he wasn't impressed by the 3D. And if you look at his reviews, any 3D movie that has come out, he's always said something detracting. And then this is... And he gave it a 4 out of 4. So
yeah, I just skimmed over.
You went to Avatar Day, right?
I did go to Avatar Day. Yes.
So, is there a difference in the footage you saw at Avatar Day versus what you saw in the final product?
I think it's a different with Avatar Day because with Avatar Day you're just shown 4 scenes, just kind of cut up and thrown at your face, and it was cool. It was like, wow, that's awesome! I can't wait to see.
Was it in 3D?
Yeah, 3D.
Okay.
Not IMAX. It was just a regular theater. Oh, I think it was a LIMAX. One of the, you know,
one of the fake IMAXs, which is a whole other debate for another day.
Yeah. And so actually the one thing seeing Avatar and, you know, the full film on the big screen was in the beginning, I don't know if Dan noticed this, but I know I went with my girlfriend too, Jenna, and the humans, if they do fast movement, it's still kind of, it felt kind of jarring and jagged to me. Yeah. Yeah, so that was, and then that was the same thing that happened. And I mean, it happened with me with My Bloody Valentine. It happened, because that was all, you know, there was no CG, you know, or not, you know, it wasn't CG world. And it happened, you know, in this film too, even, you know, and it bothered me kind of throughout the film. But as they start to mix more with towards the end of the film, which I won't say anything, but it kind of goes away. But that, it's still there. And I think there still needs to be a little bit of work. In terms of, you know, making it completely immersive, because I could definitely notice it towards the beginning.
Well,
of the film.
I mean, you know, what it reminds me of is, I mean, if you watch The Wizard of Oz, you know, and how that was the first film that had any kind of color in it, you know, if you watch that movie, it is the pioneer movie, right? That is the first movie that incorporates color tones into its film and all this, naturally. And then But I mean, there's something imperfect about it. I mean, that's kind of one of the endearing things about it, is kind of how weird it looks in a way. Like, and it's supposed to be a dream, oddly enough, which is, you know, kind of like Avatar, Another World, you know. And then Gone with the Wind comes out, you know, which is a full color film. You know, they spend all this money on it, and it really, you know, to an extent, improves and continues to perfect what Wizard of Oz started. So I think what we need now after Avatar, which is, you know, if I will, you know, bold as it may be, the Wizard of Oz of this technology, totally. We need our Gone with the Wind. We need our, you know, next totally. Step. So
will the next step be Avatar 2? Would the next step be something that's not Cameron-related?
Tintin's the next.
Tintin's
technology. So
here's the thing, though. If we're referring to color and 3D, when we look at these color movies like Wizard of Oz or Gone with the Wind and home video, we're able to see the colors because of the screens we're watching on. With these 3D movies, I mean, is it going to come with 3D glasses, an option to see the movie?
Something I want to get into next is the reason I think 3D hasn't taken off yet fully. For me, it's because of the home market, because the end day comes down to your home market, because that's the final way people are going to experience these films. And if you don't have the proper technology in the home, if you don't have the proper technology in the home to portray these films the way they want it to be seen, then you lose that. So now you see a lot of, I know there's a lot of announcements of next year you're going to see a lot of releases for 3D televisions.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. There's definitely, in the spring, I think they're starting to hit, but I don't know, see, that's the thing. Like, people are just now getting into HD TVs. If you really look at how much they've penetrated the market,
not that much.
You know, it's not, I mean, I'm decent, but it's on, you know, high-end homes and stuff.
I mean, think of how many friends' houses you've gone to who still have 4:3 TVs. I mean, it's, you know, standard.
Yeah. For me,
my home. Yeah. I only have one.
I've got one HD TV in my house. That's it.
I only have one widescreen TV.
Me too. See, for me, what I think is going to, needs to make it was going to make or break 3D in the home market, and 3D in the theater too. When I think about it, the glasses, it's so minuscule, but if you lose the glasses, that's what I think will propel 3D to new heights.
See, I don't know. I wear glasses, okay? So I mean, I know that's like another big thing. You know, if you wear glasses, then you have to put glasses on over them. Is it like a burden? And honestly, I mean, I've been to like 3 or 4 more 3D movies, and it's never been a problem for me. It really hasn't. I mean, so.
But in the whole market,
for God's sakes, I was at Cannes, and these are the most powerful people in the industry, and they all were willing with tuxedos on to put on the glasses and watch up in 3D, and no one complained. So it just kind of like.
But that's the movie theater. What about the whole market, though? Is anyone going to be wanting to wear those glasses when they're sitting home on their couch?
I think it's kind of a fun novelty thing to start. I mean, hopefully that's how it started. Because if you saw, remember the Super Bowl, how they had the Monsters vs. Alien commercial?
Yeah.
Like, I remember going to, remember how they had them at like the grocery store and you go pick them up? Yeah. And like, I picked up like 30.
They were giving them at the university cafeteria.
They were trying to, you know, get this. This is going to be like kind of the first show to see, you know. And I remember people. I got 20 of them. We had like a ton of people over. We put them on, and it was kind of fun. And I think it's just I mean, obviously 3D TVs, and I think the 3D TVs are going to use Real D glasses. So save your Real D glasses.
That would only make sense.
Yeah. And so, I mean, they're not going to have that paper thin quality. It'll feel like something. I'm sure they're going to come out with styles, you know, all sorts of stuff tomorrow. I feel like it's just like another, I mean, it's like a remote, you know, you have your remote lying around, you have your 3D glasses next to it. If it extends the experience, like, and think about this, in 20 years, I'm sure there's going to be movies, you know, that have used the technology that Avatar has used. And we'll look back and say, you know, like, oh, wow, that boom. Remember 20 years ago when Avatar came out and that kind of like broke, you know, as a watershed, if you will, for that technology. And I feel like you just have to give it time. And by then, you know, everyone will kind of be accustomed to it.
Well, when you bring it's funny because when you think about, they talk about the future of 3D, something I remember reading once was Spielberg was working on technology that would allow for no more glasses and create this with the use of plastic screens. But the thing I always think about with the glasses is the glasses make it so wherever you're sitting in the theater, you're seeing the same image. So if you're sitting at the far back of the theater, the image comes to you. If you're sitting in the front, the image comes to you.
Slightly, there are some slight ones depending on the angle you're at, the
right,
image
but,
might be distorted.
But for the most part, the glasses dictate depth.
That's true. Yeah.
Without the glasses, you're then, again, back to subject to the further you are from the image, the further you'll be from the 3D image. So that's why I think the only reason that would keep glasses around. But Dan, what were you gonna say?
No, I was just gonna
we don't know really. If we were to go back and say all 3D is gonna be coming back, I'd put money that all of us here would kind of pass it off as something pathetic, a gimmick, and it won't work out at all.
Yeah.
And we won't know how this, if indeed he does come up with this quasi-holographic image or whatever he's working on, whatever he's going to call it, we don't know if it'll even make us a part of the movie. What's to say that there'll be a time where the actions that we make in the theater are going to dictate where the movie goes in the narrative structure? We don't know these things. And we won't really know the extent of it until it's tried. So to really think of where it'll go or if it'll work out is kind of premature, especially at this stage.
Jordan, Dan, is Avatar an experimental film?
No.
I mean, in the technology sense.
Yeah, technically, I would see it's experimental, but not.
But no, because he did like, I guess, the camera test he did before Avatar. You know, to see if it would work out.
He made two documentaries.
Yeah, those were kind of, call that. And I think all the films leading up to Avatar were kind of the experimental films. I mean, the early ones.
So then would you say 3D is now pretty much mainstream?
I mean, I think we'd like to see with Avatar. That's what, I mean.
True. So is Avatar the make or break then, is what you're saying?
Yes, it is, of course.
Totally.
Listen, yeah. if Avatar, and this will not happen, I can pretty much guarantee you, but if Avatar makes 100 million worldwide, you know, and James Cameron loses all of his money and Fox, you know, has to depend on the squeakquel to you know, to survive. And if, you know, all this stuff, if that happens, then I don't know, then, you know, there'll probably be a couple of years of no 3D. But the point is, like Jordan said, Tintin's coming out, you know, like, I mean, yeah, I mean, Avatar is kind of a watershed movie. I mean, it is. But now, like, the thing is, and, like, people, I mean, this is important, Hollywood isn't the way it is. Hollywood isn't the way it used to be 70 years ago when you had Wizard of Oz and Gone with the Wind, where it was really very much kind of a profit-based industry. You know, I mean, Avatar has been in development for a decade. I mean, Fox has been prepared to spend this money for 10 years. And you know, Tintin is, you know, in post-production already. So, like, you know, they're really putting all their money into these things. And, you know, like, just that's the way it is now. You know what I mean? So I think there's no one movie that is a watershed movie the way that something like Wizard of Oz or Gone with the Wind was. But yeah, I mean.
Will 3D one day, like, completely, like, based on, because I'm solely basing this on what you've been telling me about Avatar, what you guys have said about Avatar. Well, because what you've seen here, is this the first step into completely doing away with 2D movies, though?
No. 2D will never.
No. Yeah, there's no way.
I mean, look, dude. I mean, even but they're even there's black and white movies now. Yeah. I mean, like the German, for example, that little piece of shit, and like, you know, no, I mean, like the, you know, the good German, the man who wasn't there, Raging Bull in 1980. Yeah, like, you know, they're playing Schindler's List, for God's sake. Like, you know, there are plenty of movies that hark back to, you know, people still buy records. You know, it is what it is. It's all retro, it's like cyclical. Yeah. You know, so 3D is just going to be added to the
novelty. I would go so far as to say that I don't think 3D will go mainstream. I think it'll still stay as an appetizer in the film world.
What worries me is, like what I said earlier, what's going to start happening is they'll start re-releasing movies in 3D, which is, it's kind of like what they did when color started getting big. They started coloring black and white films, which was really screwed up, and I fear that we'll start seeing that again.
Yeah, I agree.
It's inevitable. That's inevitable.
Do you want to talk about, I mean, the advantages this 3D has for the movie industry in terms of piracy and higher ticket prices? Like, people are, you know, every 3D movie costs at least $2 or $3 more, I think. And I read an article also how, you know, Academy screeners come out, and and people are wondering how Avatar is going to play when you watch it. Like all the Academy voters watch on their home theater, but I think that kind of point is like moot now with the great reviews it's been getting and kind of the exposure. You know, the Hollywood Foreign Press had their screening, and I guess someone reported that, you know, they all loved it. And but in terms of piracy, you know, Dan and I were talking about this last night, how the music industry, when it was time to, you know, when Napster came out, they didn't really do anything to, you know, try to prevent piracy at all. And now, now that the movie industry is kind of having to, you know, find these, you know, these, even though, do you want to talk about it?
What I'm pretty much saying was when the whole Napster thing started and, you know, these illegal downloads were happening 10 years ago, the music industry made a conscious decision to stick to their guns, right? And it was a bad decision, right? I mean, because when things are changing and you cannot stop them, you have to run with the change and you have to make it your own. That's the whole thing. I mean, that's the point. So instead of maybe doing, you know, creating iTunes before iTunes was created, they let iTunes happen and now they have to rely on Apple to make revenue. You know what I mean? And so like this is kind of the thing. And so in this age where there are these tentpole movies, you know, like Transformers 2, like Terminator Salvation, which are really kind of recycling of these ideas, because in a world where you're spending $250 million to make a movie and then $250 million to advertise for a movie, you know, you're not going to take risks. You know what I mean? I mean, it just makes sense. And so with a movie like Avatar, which is such a, you know, a big risk in so many ways, maybe this will be the first step in kind of a resurgence of, you know, a risky Hollywood studio, you know, coming out. I don't know.
And, you know, that theater experience that, I mean, I could never imagine watching Avatar, like a cam version of Avatar online.
Like on a laptop.
Yeah, oh,
like
God.
Like, I feel like this is like one of the movies that
you have to experience in a theater. Is this one of those theater experience movies?
Copywriting that word.
Is this one of the theater experience movies where you like it's not going to play the same anywhere else but the movie theater?
Yeah, well, I don't think any movie can really play the same anywhere else.
No, but there are movies that they don't rely on the theater experience to make the movie.
Like, I mean, we're film students and film journalists, and I mean, my thing is that there's nothing like the theater, obviously. But yeah, I know a ton of people that, you know, the average film goer doesn't feel that way, and or the average movie watcher rather. And I feel like this is one movie that you know that.
Well, needs I mean, to think be, about yeah, think to, about. Pretty much all of Cameron's movies are like this, right? I mean, even if, you know, Love or Hate Titanic or whatever, I've talked to people who regret waiting for Titanic to see on VHS. You know, like because like Roger Ebert wrote in his review, and this was a really poignant point, and I think this really kind of sums up how big Avatar is. He said it's the kind of movie that you have to see, because if you don't, you'll feel like you're behind on the conversation.
Totally, yeah. Mm.
And Transformers 2, you know, like I was saying, these movies, like, their theater experiences, I'm glad I saw Transformers 2 in the theater, because I wouldn't have really, you know, like, I wouldn't have been able to,
it's not the same movie. It wouldn't have been the same movie.
Effects. Right. I wouldn't have been able to appreciate the effects, you know, on my home screen. So, but the point is that it fails, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like Terminator failed, like a lot of these tentpole theater experience movies fail. Avatar doesn't, and that's big. I mean, that's a big step.
Yeah, it literally, if you watch this movie at home, it's not going to be the same experience as getting you're not going to feel like you were transported to this other world as much as you will.
But you're not saying like go see the movie and then after you see the movie never see it again. Like once you see it and then when it comes out on DVD, buy it.
Oh yeah, no, totally. But I also feel like this is the thing where Cameron's big on, especially after Titanic. People are saying, "Is this movie gonna have the repeat viewing? It's like Titanic did." And after seeing it, I immediately would watch it again.
That's I fear it's not gonna like Titanic. And Dan, you actually told me about this, which is why I felt like an idiot after you told me. But Titanic didn't make a huge lot of money.
$29 million.
Right, and it built up, and it just pretty much kept making that $29 million over a shitload of weeks.
Exactly. Yeah.
Avatar, I don't think is going to be the same way. It's going to have this humongous opening, and Titanic had the thing where you had the 14-year-old girls, the 13-year-old girls, and the 15-year-old boys for Kate Winslet going to see this PG-13 movie.
That's sadly not a lie.
Yeah, it's not.
Well, no. Listen, I mean, if you watched the you know, the MTV Facebook stream interview they did with like Cameron and Zoe Saldana and Sam Worthington,
right?
Cameron himself, the guy, the one good question that fucking MTV guy asked him was about what his, you know, expectations were for the box office. And he was surprisingly humble. He said, he's like, I realized that Titanic struck a chord, you know, pretty much saying, I mean, that was almost an anomaly, but that was an event of some kind of like biblical
stature. Like even he wasn't expecting that.
Expensive movies like that don't make profit margins like that anymore ever. Right, so that doesn't happen. I mean, The Dark Knight, $200 million, it's going to make $1 billion. That's only five over, you know, the you know what it costs. You know what I mean? So like that's the way it is now. But
same thing about Paranormal Activity.
But yeah, what was the fact? It was they're saying
So if Paranormal Activity, if Avatar wants to make the same percentage gross as Paranormal Activity, you know, like profit margin,
yeah,
like, you know, Paranormal Activity cost $15,000 and has made $110 million. Mm-hmm. Avatar would need to make, what is it,
$3 trillion.
Wow.
Well, I guess based on the assumption it cost $300 million.
Yeah.
Right.
Basically, but like America would have to go to war with Avatar.
The thing that you got to remember is Fox isn't the only one who has money staked in this movie. They have the most. But the $300 million is coming from multiple different sources. It's not like anyone's going to lose huge amounts of money if the movie fails. Yeah,
that's what I was saying before. I mean, this is the way Hollywood is now. It's all bet hedging. You know what I mean? Like you know, Weinstein Company, Universal, to release Inglourious Basterds because it cost $70 million and Weinstein doesn't have that much. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Halcon partners with Warner Brothers to distribute Terminator because they don't have that much.
Shutter Island's example I think of. They pushed Shutter Island a year because Paramount.
Well, that's like, a different reason. It's just Paramount pushing it back. I mean, that's a Paramount movie. But I mean, yeah, like, yeah.
There was this. Did you know that there was actually? It was actually because of
Leo.
Yeah, with Inception. I just realized that.
Really?
What happened?
Allegedly it's because Leo had to shoot Inception for five or six months.
He would have missed the entire PR campaign.
Yeah, and they couldn't do an awards campaign with him. So that was another huge reason, I guess, which is interesting. But Meryl, I kind of want to go back to the opening. I mean, we started with 3D, but I guess we can talk about, you know, because it is about if Avatar is successful. You said that Avatar, you think it's going to get a big opening weekend. And I hope it does. And but that history and I Am Legend is the only December, the number one December film. And that only opened with $77 million.
Right.
And which is not big.
But you got to remember, there are movies now, like the example that's coming to mind is 2012. 2012 feels like a summer movie. And it pulled in summer numbers on a November release.
Hang on. Not really.
Yeah.
2012 is actually that's a good point, because 2012 is a good example of what a movie like that should do nowadays, which is to say it made $150 million so far, right, domestically, which is not good when you consider it's a $200 million budget and, like, the shitload of money they spent on the ad campaign. But overseas it made, I believe, $520 million it made.
Really?
So it's made almost $700 million worldwide. Okay, and this is the point, and this is where Cameron was on base with this too, was he got all these, you know, he was part of all these, you know, with the company IMAX, who has a stake in Avatar. You know, Fox is sharing, you know, producing with IMAX, the company. They built all these IMAX theaters in other countries, you know what I mean?
Right.
Directly for the release of Avatar. Like Jordan said, that it's playing in 17,000 theaters. And, you know what I mean?
And for comparison, New Moon was playing in like 12,000.
Theaters, right.
Yeah, and our 2012 was 12,000 and New Moon was like 10,000. So right. And if 2012 can make almost $700 million with what, like, so, yeah, 7,000 less theaters. I feel like Avatar's gonna be huge.
Is Avatar a film that's gonna do well overseas and not?
Oh yeah, I think so.
Oh yeah. No, I mean, from what I've been
saying, it's gonna do well overseas. What I'm saying is, by comparison to the domestic box office, though, is it gonna do better?
Well, because you have to consider the fact, the lack of cynicism in other countries. You know, a lot of these people have not seen movies like The Towering Inferno. They haven't seen movies like, maybe they haven't seen movies like Independence Day, because that was right kind of at the beginning of that, you know, switch over to international, you know, stuff. And so maybe 2012 isn't as tired as we look at it, you know? And I mean, and so, okay, we look at 2012 as like a tired, stupid, kind of fun movie. And now we're saying Avatar is not only not tired, but revolutionary. What are these people in, you know, countries that haven't seen anything?
Right. Yeah, like in at HitFix, Drew's review, he said, like, for the 9-year-old that hasn't seen Dances with Wolves, like, Avatar's going to be the greatest movie of all time.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. And, like, not to compare the foreign audience to 9-year-olds, but, like...
No, but, yeah, I'm confident of this. You know, my 12-year-old brother, who I'm seeing this with in a week, you know, he's a smart kid. He's critical about movies. You know what I mean? And, but, like, you know, like Jordan says, he hasn't seen Dances with Wolves. He hasn't seen The Last Samurai. He hasn't seen The New World. Like, no one's seen The New World. he's going to fucking love the shit out of Avatar. He's going to love it. You know, and also, and this is the other thing, he's going to love the shit out of Sam Worthington. And, like, and you know, in 10 years, people are going to be talking about Sam Worthington. God. Like, Sam, do you remember when he broke out in Avatar?
Sam Worthington is just like, where did Sam Worthington come from? Because he just, like, kind of spawned out of nowhere.
That he will become a star in a James Cameron movie and not in a sequel to a James Cameron movie. Yeah. Hello.
I want off topic for a quick second. Did you guys hear about James Cameron? He finally saw Salvation.
Yeah, I saw it on. I know the quote if you want to.
Yeah, go ahead. You can say it.
He saw it in between late nights at Avatar. He saw it at a cable hotel room over three separate nights. And he said, oh, it was better than expected.
That's awesome. What? Really?
I mean,
I think that's kind of how everyone felt, right, about it. Like, it was just better than expected.
Not some people,
which wasn't like, much. I mean, saying better,
but then Transformers.
No, but my point is, like, what were people expecting? You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it was
honestly,
better.
I was one of the few people that was expecting a lot and walked out just slapped in the face.
Actually, you know what, Ash? I did too.
Yeah, I was gonna say.
Yeah, I expected a lot because the Avatar just gave, it's like, oh, it's just, it's to the tone. It felt they toned it like the they felt like they were gonna tone it like the Cameron films.
Oh god, yeah, they toned it so freaking well in the campaign.
In fairness, it was the second best trailer of this year.
Oh god, yes. Yeah. What was the first one?
A Single Man. Hell yeah.
I gotta
see that trailer still. Let's close this out quickly. Future, what do you guys think the future of 3D is gonna be? Hash, let's start with you.
Future 3D is, hopefully we'll get to a point where it will actually be able to immerse people properly instead of just a gimmick. However, hopefully on my end, I don't think it will be strong enough to take over the market as a whole. We'll still have 2D films running all the time, but 3D films will still be an appetizer, and hopefully it'll be used properly. I'd love to see an independent movie shot for purposely in 3D and take all these extremely, you know, avant-garde steps of using 3D in film. I would love to see that. Hopefully, I'll be able to see that someday.
Joe Dante movie called The Hole that's been at film festivals is one that is kind of a really a small budget.
And Coraline, Coraline's kind of like that too. Yeah. Coraline.
But anyways.
But no, you're right. Focus.
But you're right.
Dan, what's your opinion on the future of 3D?
I think that, you know, with Avatar and, you know, Tintin and these movies, it'll for a while be a tentpole thing. You know, it'll be a tentpole kind of a big studio thing. Just as huge Clark Gable movies were back in the day. And with time, it'll kind of just become more of just a normal part of cinema. You know, you'll see, you know, a $50 million movie in 3D. You'll see a Joe Dante $5 million movie in 3D. You'll see a $250 million movie in 3D. But the point is, I agree with Hash, 2D is, you know, and I think that that'll never go away.
Again, 2D is film. 3D, you're pushing digital.
Yeah, I think it's interesting you bring in that whole, like, you're going to see $50 million movie shot in 3D. I think back to, like, how long did it take CG to get to a point where it could be done cheaply. Like District 9 was really the first example.
Exactly. Good point.
It was
good
$30 million to District 9 and beautiful CG, just really good photorealistic CG.
I mean, you know, first to Jurassic Park,
right?
And then, you know,
but that took starting with Jurassic Park in 93, you know, it took a very long time. So it's going to take another very long time for 3D to reach that point. But Jordan, where do you think 3D is heading?
Yeah, I'm going to make a bold prediction. I think it's going to break pretty heavy into the theater market. But I think that, we'll see the spring with the 3D TVs. But I feel like people are just getting caught up, like I said before, with HD TVs, that it won't break that domestic market, which is still is a huge thing they have to get through to kind of get it accepted. And I think with the introduction of more 3D theaters, and movies that use not the cheap gimmick 3D, but movies, you know, like Avatar, like Tintin, like, you know, if you, there's a
wait, first of all, we haven't seen Tintin yet, so
yeah, can't,
I don't know.
I want to say
Spielberg will be able to pull 3D off.
That's my problem.
Enough,
see, I'm not worried about,
you don't know.
Yeah, I'm not worried about
but what I'm saying is he's using the technology that Cameron used.
Okay.
Right,
after he went to the set,
but I think
Avatar,
it's also about the artist though, because I'm not worried about Peter Jackson being able to utilize 3D. He seems like a kind of filmmaker who was built for it. Spielberg doesn't seem like a filmmaker that's really built for a 3D world.
I don't know. I mean, he directed Jurassic Park.
Yeah, Jurassic Park. I still think Jurassic Park is some of the best. CG.
It holds up today.
The whole time.
Yeah, it still
and does. But you know, if you look, there's quotes and every filmmaker that. The set of Avatar, you know, J.J. Abrams, Guillermo del Toro, Peter Jackson, you know, a ton, you know,
yeah.
There's the list goes on, but they all said that, wow, this technology really is going to catch on. And even George Lucas said he might shoot. There's some rumor that he's going to do the next three Star Wars films.
No.
Let's hope.
Well, the rumor is he may do another set of Star Wars films, but that's a lot.
Isn't it?
Yeah, but he said
Han Solo
use...
and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
Yeah, yeah.
Indiana Jones 5, 3D.
Yeah, this is technology.
For me, it's like, I'll always be a creature of 2D. I like 2D movies. Mm-hmm. I was never into 3D. I didn't even see Up in 3D. I didn't want to. I always felt like 3D always felt like a gimmick to me, even as a kid. So if 3D catches on, I'm not going to be hesitant. I'm not going to be against it. But I just think that there's a lot of filmmakers today who are not built for a 3D universe, who can't think like how is this going to look in 3D? Kind of like how when before the days of color and people were shooting in black and white, those cinematographers had to think, how is this going to look in black and white? I don't think there's filmmakers who were thinking while they're in production, how is this going to look in 3D?
Not yet.
I look forward to your tweet after Avatar.
I think I'm going to like it. Well, I'm seeing Avatar in 3D. I made sure to point that because that's the way Cameron wants me to see it.
Yeah, I'm going to see it in 3D too, but it's definitely not going to be opening weekend.
I'm going to the midnight premiere. That's going to be fun.
Nice.
Already got my tickets. So let's close this out. Hash, where can people find more of you on the internet?
They can find me when they Google me.
Jordan?
Yes, you can find me doing a whole ton of crap on thefilmstage.com and also twitter.com/thefilmstage.
Oh yes, there's also that. I'm on that website too.
Are you?
Are you, Hash?
Dan?
Well, you can find me at playboy.com/DJ Mecca. And also, I'm just kidding. And also, what's my Twitter name? Oh yeah, DJ Mecca. You know, DJ Mecca is my Twitter name. twitter.com/DJ Mecca. And the film stage, I've been known to write for that. Taking on Invictus on that site.
Oh yeah, please, and anyone listening, don't see Invictus.
Yeah, don't. It's not worth your time.
Continue the lack of viewership.
Yeah, and thank God it only made 9 million.
Yeah. You can find
That's
me. Yeah, you can find me on twitter.com/song43, mailbar.com, and writing for the film stage. Join us next week when we're going to be discussing holiday films, and we're going to have a very special guest on. Which I'm not going to reveal right now, but you'll be very intrigued to hear what he has to say. Thank you.
Is it Tim Allen?
It's not Tim Allen.
Oh, Jesus Christ. No.
Well, I'm not listening.
thank you very much for joining us in our second episode of TFS Spotlight. Have a good night.
See ya.
Later.